was Dr. Eastman and Dr. Moot.
Wow, okay. Okay.
At the time, but I think all of them are now gone.
Okay.
But at that time, also, the chemistry building, as I knew it, was still there. That was the old red stone structure. Mm-hmm. And my place of work, mm-hmm. or where I lived, really, mm-hmm. was in the back mm-hmm. building, the annex, down in the basement.
Wow, okay.
And it was an excellent place mm-hmm. for thermochemical work.
Okay.
Because the temperature in that room, because of the stone surroundings mm-hmm. and the depth and what have you overhead, the temperature in that building didn't vary a half degree over a day.
Okay. Okay.
And so it was a great Absolutely. It was a great place. Yeah. And mm-hmm. I'm not sure who the students were that were there before me, but when mm-hmm. I first got there and I was told that I could work down there,
okay.
I went down and started looking in the cabinets for the equipment.
Okay. Right? Okay.
I opened the cabinet doors and they were full of wine bottles. And I eventually determined that mm-hmm. whoever was there before me mm-hmm. had set up a still and was distilling alcohol. So he left it to me to dispose of all these wine mm-hmm. bottles. Mm-hmm. Names I'd never heard of before. Anyway, mm-hmm. that was my introduction to my mm-hmm. place. But it was a good place to work. And mm-hmm. For what I was doing, I had good equipment. Mm-hmm. And to say with the availability of the machine shop, that I could mm-hmm. what I needed, I could get. Mm-hmm. And most of the things I needed was something I couldn't buy, so mm-hmm. able to make them. But
so could you speak about your peers, the students who are getting masters and PhDs at the same time? I was wondering whether you could tell us a little bit about your peers, the people doing masters and PhDs. At that time, and what did they do? What happened to them afterwards?
The one of the individuals mm-hmm. that I worked with went on and also got his PhD mm-hmm. With Parks. He was also working in thermochemistry,
mm-hmm.
and in fact, he used. Much of the equipment that I had designed and mm-hmm. built there for handling also volatile
okay.
products.
Okay.
And he stayed on at the university and worked with an individual called Dr. Grinnell, who was one of the professors who taught electrical aids to chemistry.
Oh, I see. Wow.
And what it was a course on the design of electrical amplifiers temperature measuring systems and what have you.
Okay.
Leland, the gentleman mm-hmm. with me, mm-hmm. stayed on and worked mm-hmm. with him.
Okay.
Now, I'm not sure what capacity it was.
Okay.
The last I had heard, he was with him, but I think he has since passed away. He unfortunately had some medical problems that mm-hmm. really hindered what he could mm-hmm. do. Mm-hmm. But anyway, mm-hmm. And one of the fellows that came up from San Jose with me, an individual called Dick Perrine, mm-hmm. went on to the University of Southern Cal, I think it was, and took on a professorship there.
Okay.
think that also had, I can't remember, there was a young lady who was with us. And I think she also went to either University of Cal or Southern Cal,
okay.
One of the other, as,
okay.
As,
okay.
As an associate professor at the mm-hmm. graduate.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, that's about all I can
okay.
I can recall right
uh-huh.
now.
Uh-huh.
I think the number of graduate students
uh-huh.
in the
okay.
chemistry department
uh-huh.
at that time was probably of the order of 10 to 15.
Oh, I see. That was very small.
That's all
cool.
Yeah. And the situation, the way it was, the only time I kind of interfaced okay. with most of them was during coursework.
Okay.
Something like
okay.
But just a little Bond who worked close to me. I mean, I
okay.
followed him closely as well as, Dick Perrine. In fact, Dick and I would stop sometimes and pick him up. And
okay.
He lived in Sunnyvale? Mountain View. Sunnyvale.
Okay.
So I would stop there and pick him up and
okay.
take him up there.
Mm-hmm.
And he worked with Johnston.
Okay.
He was a student of Johnston.
Okay. Okay. So I was wondering, any memories of Stanford, of the... Any memories of Stanford, I mean, the institution, or how can I say that? I mean, Stanford, the Stanford of mid-1950s is very different from the Stanford of today, right?
Oh,
it's my... It's, I,
uh-huh. Yeah, I...
Uh-huh.
I guess I always recalled the chapel. I think that
okay.
was just...
Okay.
From the
yeah.
first time I went in...
Uh-huh.
To the last time I was there, I mean, the, when you go through the gates, you know, that's the first
uh-huh.
thing you see, and I always recall that. There's, as I say, when I was there, most of the chemical activities were in the
okay.
stone building.
Yes.
There was a, I guess I call it
uh-huh.
temporary building
uh-huh.
out back, and Dick Eastman and Harry Mosher had offices out there.
Okay.
But primarily the
okay.
the analytical group. Oggs. I don't think Oggs had any students. When I was there, everybody kind of steered clear of him. He was a strange individual. Eastman, Parks was there, and Koenig was there. So
okay.
most of the
okay.
The disciplines were there. In the
okay.
building. I think I was somewhat amazed in how, when the last time I was there, how things have changed in there. Of course, the old chemistry building is gone, and it's a number of, I almost call them high rises, in there that have been built. And I think the department has evidently expanded quite a bit since I was there.
Yeah.
I suspect there are a lot more graduate students. The rest of the campus, as I say, I didn't become too familiar with it. I guess the only time I really got over into that part is when I took my my language exams.
Okay.
Which is again an interesting experience, especially for one who had never taken French.
Oh, I see.
To get through the French exam.
Uh-huh. So how did you pass it?
I read about 7 pages in Doyle's Chemical Fence.
Yes.
And I went over and took the exam. Wow. and it wasn't, of course, it was a just a written exam.
Okay.
It wasn't an oral exam, so we were given just a section in a French journal and asked to decipher it.
Wow.
And I probably lucked out because I got through all right. But anyway, that was my excursion into other part of the university.
So you moved to Shell in 1955, right?
Dr. Folks, Fred Folks, who was with Shell at the time, came down. I think he was a pretty close friend to Hutchinson at the time.
Okay.
They were both surface chemists. And he came over and Eric brought him down in the lab where I was working to meet me. And we talked for quite some time.
Okay.
And then, maybe about 3 months or so later, I got this invitation to come to Shell and visit them and find out whether I might be interested in joining them.
Okay.
So that was my introduction to Shell.
Okay.
And Fred at the time was a supervisor in the surface chemistry group, and this group reported to Norton was his last name. Ken Dutling was the assistant department head, and I can't remember his first name. Norton was the department head. And that group reported to Tamalee.
Okay.
Anyway, they invited me over, I thought it looked like an interesting position. What they wanted me to do was to get involved in one of the problem areas that they had in the grease field.
Okay.
And so I took the job and worked at that time. Let's see, there was Webb Sawyer, Gazer Ronay, Nat May, and myself, I guess, made up the service chemistry group. And I spent a good part of my time initially here again rebuilding that calorimeter that I made in Stanford because they wanted to use it there. So I worked with their instrument department, and of course I didn't do any of the hands-on work, but I was just kind of an advisor at that point. And we built a model of that unit, and it took a better part of a year and a half, I guess, to get that complete.
Okay.
And they tried to automate as much of it as possible, and there are pluses and minuses to that. which we gradually worked out. And when they finally had it finished, then I checked it out, and it it worked fairly well. I thought it was was going to be okay. I had to change a few parts of the electrical part of it because in this case, the way they were measuring the calibrated heat input, or the heat input to calibrate, had a fair amount of error because of relay switching time.
So I
had to make some corrections there. But anyway, what I finally got into, and most of the work that I did there itself, was related to, actually, it was grease system. There was, they were trying to develop a clay-based grease.
Yes.
And what they were concerned about is there was a patent in the literature that said that certain amides bonded nicely to clay surfaces, like here again, like the montmorillonite systems, and would end up could end up then in a composite mass that had good lubricating properties. However, they had they said that there was a chemical bond between the amid system and the clay. And that was the basis of the patent. So Shell was doing this. What they had originally done is they had, taken a grease and found an excellent amide system, which gave them really a very good grease. And, but they were concerned about the this patent, and they didn't. What they asked me to do was to determine whether there was a bond in that system that, united the the amine with the clay, or whether it was just a physical absorption. And so I had to devise a system which would allow me to enter increments, known increments of the amine, which was a liquid phase, into a given concentration of clay. And this took a bit of doing, but I finally devised a little piston-type sample container, which I could inject part of the amine that was there by simply depressing the piston with a rod going through the top, which I had calibrated. So I know exactly how much I was I was introducing, and the system worked very nicely because once you injected some of the amine, the system closed off, the clay closed off the end of the injector. So I didn't have any continual reaction between the two. And so I measured the heats involved there, and at the end showed very nicely that there was, it was a good chemical system, and I had the heats of absorption plotted as a function of the the amount of amide going in. And very definitely proved that that Shell would be violating that patent. And I wanted to publish that data. I thought it was a good piece of work. But they would not allow it because of the situation. I mean, I can understand that. But that's primarily the work that I did. The work that I really didn't do any work in the foam system. In the, Web Sawyer and Geza were primarily.
I see. Okay.
And they were primarily the people involved in that.
Okay.
I did some work in designing a system to measure the rate of restoration of the foam after the depression, which was a critical property, that kind of separated good foams from bad foams.
Okay.
And so I devised a system that allowed us to do that.
Okay.
And that was primarily my work there. And I left Shell. I guess for two reasons. The first is I am an individual that really enjoys cooperating with people and working together with people. And what happened after I'd finished the work on the grease system, word came down that they're going to put me in another department. And I kind of objected to that. I said, if they've got a problem, someone should come talk to me about what the problem is, so I know what's going on. And I said, if I can be of any help, I'll be glad to do that.
Okay.
But that didn't happen, and what I guess I felt was I was now really kind of a small number in a big organization of numbers, and I'm sure the individual up on top didn't know beans about me, but shifted me about. And being a young, maybe headstrong individual, I objected to that. Well, at the same time, going back during that problem with the grease, there was a portion of that research that I couldn't do there. I needed some other equipment. So I took it upon myself to go back to the university, and I commuted back and forth for a number of days to use some of the equipment that I had designed and built there to take care of that part of the problem. And I got almost to the end of it, and then I was told, we're not interested in that. You shouldn't have done that in the first place. That didn't fit very good. And then Eric Hutchinson, whom I worked for and knew very well, was consulting for Sprague Electric Company. And they were just then trying to get into the semiconductor area. I mean, they were primarily a capacitor company. And so he suggested to them that they needed a good chemist. And he had someone that he would recommend. And so he told them about me. And John Sprague came out, and we spent a couple of days together talking.
So he came up to Emeryville?
Here to California,
And
then he invited me back to to see what was going on, and to spend some time there to meet the people and talk about some of the problems and what have you. So I did, and I was very, very enthused. I mean, here was a whole area that that nobody was watching over. And so I thought, geez, what a great way. And talking to to John and some of the people there, mm-hmm. and also specifically mm-hmm. to Mr. Sprague himself, to R.C. Sprague,
who okay.
started the company and at that time was the chief operating officer, chief mm-hmm. executive officer.
Okay.
Talked to him, and I came away with the feeling that you really have freedom to mm-hmm. pursue
okay.
what you think you need to pursue.
Okay.
And that
okay. Okay.
Geez, was what I think I okay. and anybody else would okay. like to hear.
You know? Okay. Okay.
And to know, and I really felt that there was, it wasn't just discussion or this, it wasn't just talk, but there was
okay.
there was some truth to it. And talking to the people that worked there,
uh-huh. Uh-huh.
primarily in the area of capacitors, but
uh-huh. Uh-huh.
but they all said that yeah, they really had the freedom to do what they wanted, and okay. as a result, there was a lot of really good research going on.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
But anyway,
uh-huh.
Uh-huh. I decided yeah, I needed to join uh-huh. them, and it wasn't difficult
uh-huh.
for me to make that decision after what had just
okay.
happened.
Okay. Okay. Okay.
So uh-huh. I went home and talked to my wife about it,
mm-hmm.
and we decided, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
She always had supported what I wanted to do, and
okay. Okay.
that was good. So we
okay.
we packed up and
mm-hmm.
put our house on the market,
mm-hmm.
and
okay.
moved back to
mm-hmm.
To Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm. So actually, if we go back in the past. I was wondering, why is it that Fred Hutchinson was consulting with Sprague? I was wondering about the consulting
well,
that Hutchinson was doing with Sprague, and why was there a connection
Eric,
between the two?
Yeah, I think uh-huh. Eric was consulting with him because this is a real interesting thing.
Uh-huh.
John Sprague went to Stanford, too.
Yeah, I know. Uh-huh.
And John took his PhD there. No, he worked with Testado. But anyway, he had met Harry.
Okay, okay.
At
okay.
that time.
Okay.
And so when he went back
mm-hmm.
To Massachusetts,
mm-hmm.
he
mm-hmm.
said, hey,
okay.
we might okay. have a good contact here
okay.
to
okay.
help us get
okay.
through some of the
okay.
problems we're having here.
Okay.
And so that's the way that association goes.
Okay. And I was wondering whether you would like to talk now about John Sprague and his personality and his approach to things.
John,
uh-huh.
I think John and I have always got along pretty well. John is an individual that I can talk to.
Uh-huh.
I sometimes disagree with him.
Uh-huh.
But we disagree
okay.
to disagree.
Okay.
And,
okay. Okay.
So it works out, and we're still friends after all these years, and
mm-hmm.
see mm-hmm. each other.
Mm-hmm.
On occasion, I go down to North Adams every once in a while.
Okay.
I have some property down there I have to
okay.
check on, and,
okay.
so I stop and see
okay.
John.
Okay.
Talk.
Okay.
And he's an interesting individual. He's an intelligent young man. Some of his administrative capacities, I have some some
okay.
real problems with, but
okay.
but anyway,
okay.
I first really got well associated when he came out
mm-hmm.
and we talked here for.
Mm-hmm.
It's a couple of days, and
mm-hmm.
I went back.
Mm-hmm.
But when I first went back,
mm-hmm.
I'm trying to remember who was director. John had really just joined the company too.
Okay.
He found that he couldn't get a job in any one of the semiconductor
uh-huh.
companies because his name was Sprague. so he went back and joined Sprague. And I think his position was kind of undefined at the time. But the gentleman who was director of research, and at that time research was primarily capacitor research in that area. Got his name on my tongue, but I can't think of it. Very, very prolific in the area of patents. Anyway, he was director of research and development, and he just passed away. Just all of a sudden, wasn't expected. He was gone.
Wow.
And so John took over as director of research at that time.
Okay.
And when I originally joined Sprague, then I reported directly to John.
Oh, I see.
And so our communication lines were pretty good at that time. About a year later, John was elected as a vice president of research and development, and so the decision upstairs was made that they needed to get a director of research. And so they brought in a young man named Lincoln Vogel from, I think he came from Westinghouse. As I recall. But anyway, he was there and served as director of research for semiconductors, because the decision had been made that we need to look very carefully at getting into the semiconductor field. Now, originally they had purchased the process for making germanium germanium transistors, and had installed that in Concord. So they were in that part of the business already, and they had a